everyone, this is Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 4 of the Art Scene Podcast. This week's guest is Horacio Ramos Serna. He is a Peruvian art historian who specializes in 20th century Latin American art, architecture, and urbanism, but more specifically in Peru. He taught at the Pontificia Universidad Católica de Peru in Lima and was also a researcher at El Museo de Arte de Lima. But now he's preparing to move to New York for a fellowship at the City University of New York. To add to his long resume, he also happens to be my dad's cousin, or I guess my first cousin once removed. Today, we're going to talk about the work he does and the Peruvian art scene and culture. But before you listen to our conversation, it's important for me to provide a little context. You see, Peru is a culturally rich and diverse country with a long artistic heritage rooted in both its indigenous past and Spanish colonization. Peru's colonial history also established social and racial inequalities that continued long after its independence. From the 1930s to the late 1970s, the country alternated between democratic leadership and military dictatorships. In recent decades, this has led to internal conflict between the military forces and terrorist groups in the 1980s and 1990s, finally ending in the year 2000 with the resignation and self-exile of President Alberto Fujimori, who, although was elected, for all intents and purposes, was actually a dictator. This time period is now being reflected in Peru's contemporary artistic output. Okay, now that I've given you the background on Peru, here's my conversation with Horacio Ramos Serna. Hey, Horacio, how's it going? How's Peru?
It's an interesting moment for Peru. We've just elected a new president. Who's going to start the administration in July, at the end of July.
Oh, wow.
And it has been a very complicated election because it's like from the Democratic Party, I guess, but it's a conservative one. But it was not the worst-case scenario, which was the other possibility, which was the daughter of the ex-president that was a dictator, actually.
So, oh, yeah, Fujimori, right?
Yeah. So it's a very interesting moment, actually, in Peru. Yeah, and it's also summer, so that's the nice part of Peru. And I don't know, I guess it's a very interesting moment in terms of politics, but also in terms of culture, because with every new administration, there also starts a new Ministry of Culture, and so many artistic and cultural institutions get different chief's heads. So it's going to be a moment of change right now. I think that also involves a lot of a different cultural scene. Because, for example, the current current Ministry of Culture has sent down much for the local museums or for the local art scene in general. It's been more like a very mainly related to some specific parts of the cultural scene, like the opera and the ballet, but hasn't been interested in helping other types of artistic experiences more diverse, more democratic, for example, more for different audiences, right? So I think we were hoping that the new administration is going to be more interesting for the cultural scene here in Peru. We hope so. Yeah. Well, at least in my case, I work in until very recently, I work in the Museo de Arte de Lima, in the Museum of Art of Lima.
Okay.
The museum's got a very good relationship with the elected president, with the president that's going to be the president right now.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be an interesting situation, and I hope it's going to work well for the museum. And I hope it works well for other museums too, because we have a very diverse scene with different types of museum. As you might, you already know, we have this pre-Columbian past that is very important for our local identity. So archaeological museums are important, but contemporary art museums are also very important, and they need stronger help from the state or from different sectors, I guess. Yeah. So, well, I don't know. I just meant to say that it's going to be a moment of change, but yeah. Maybe that's for the good.
Yeah. So, I think the first time I ever met you was about 6 years ago. Okay. And I believe then you were still in school. So now, yeah. So now you work at the National Museum in Peru, right? That's the one in Lima, yeah. Right? The Museo de Arte de Lima, right?
Yeah.
And so everyone knows you're a cousin of mine. I forget if it's a second cousin or a third cousin. I forget how it works, but you're my dad's cousin. And so I met you on a trip with my grandparents to basically meet my family in Peru, which I had never met any of you. Yeah. I heard about everyone, but I never have met everyone. But it was interesting because when I went there and then, then I met you and I was excited that I had a family member who was my same age. And then also at the same time, trying to pursue a career in the arts.
Yeah.
And I learned, you showed me a glimpse of what the art scene was a little bit and the people that you hang out with in Peru. And it was really interesting, very different. And I remember one of the first things that I thought was like, how is it I don't know about this? How is it that there's not enough of this known in the rest of the world? And, and when I went to grad school, with a few people from South America. And even then, they came from different parts. That was still very different from what you showed me is in Peru. Mm-hmm. So like, now you're coming, you said you're going to be, I heard that you were going to be coming to New York City for like a fellowship, I believe, or something, right? Or,
yeah. Well, the fellowship, it's a PhD studies fellowship, I guess. It's for completing, 5 years of PhD, of doctoral studies.
Okay.
In art history in CUNY, in City University of New York. So it's a 5-year fellowship to study and to live in the city. So it's going to be a drastic change for me of the scene of environment.
Yeah.
And I do think that the local scene here in Lima, mm-hmm. which is different from the scene in other parts of Peru, like mm-hmm. Trujillo, like Chimbote, Chiclayo, mm-hmm. the local scene in Lima is very rich right now. It's rich in terms of that it's diverse, that it's very interesting, it's very alive. And it's also very local. That's probably why it's not it's not very well known outside of Peru because it's related to very specific issues from Peru too, with local identities, local traditions. Mm-hmm. And also it's very related to how younger people uses those traditions in their own way. So I guess that's why it's I guess that's one of the reasons why it's not very well known yet outside. But there's a lot of interesting people that's trying to make it well known outside. Like for example, there's Miguel Lopez. He's a very interesting curator that has got a lot of he's curated a lot of exhibitions outside of Peru and in the States too, mm-hmm. Who's trying to make more accessible people to know outside of Peru how the scene in Peru works. Mm-hmm. I will try to do that too once I get to New York. Yeah. And I already have a couple of projects. Mainly an art historian. I'm not devoted to. Well, I haven't pursued the curatorship part of the career yet because I in this particular moment I'm very interested in in writing the history of my own tradition, of the local traditions from Peru. Yeah. But I do think that curatorship is important to make people know these traditions. So I will try to curate more exhibitions soon. Mm-hmm. Well, what I was trying to say in the first place was that I have a couple of projects for working with collections here in Peru, mm-hmm. and to make a couple of papers and hopefully exhibitions about that in New York. I've met some people, in the American Society in New York, that are very interested in knowing more about Peru. And I think you also were talking about the cultural scene here, which is, like I was telling you, is very alive. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it has the institutionalization. I don't know if that's the word, but it's not very well established yet. And I think that's partly because we don't have still, there's a lot of artistic initiatives that don't have the money. Mm-hmm. We don't have the money because the state usually does not invest in culture and in arts here in Peru, mm-hmm. but also because there's many, the private sector is not also, it's not very interested in helping the culture either. I do want to mention that, I work I think what is the most prestigious museum here in Peru, which is the Museum of Art of Lima. But I wanted to mention that it's not a public museum. It's not a national museum. Mm. And that's, I think, a very significant aspect of our cultural scene, which is that the public museum and the national museum, they are not very well established. They don't have a strong program of exhibitions or of publications. And I mean, and I'm not trying to criticize here. I'm just stating something that I think it should be discussed and should be modified, because I do think that it's important that the National Museum or the Public Museum are the main spaces for showing art and showing history to people. But sadly, here in Peru, that's not the case. I think here in Peru, the state is more interested in other aspects of the social life, mm-hmm. but not in the arts and in the cultural aspects. So here is more like the private sector, the one that it's investing in arts and culture. And I think that's also a very interesting aspect of Peru. I think there's beautiful initiatives and a beautiful scene, but it's starting from the people, from individual people, and not starting from the state or not starting from institutions more in the traditional sense. So I think that's something that I'm interested. I want to discuss that, to reflect, to write about that probably. Mm-hmm. And hopefully to change that, because I do think that it's important that the state invests in its country's culture and arts.
And once you're done with the program, do you plan on coming back to Lima?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I probably that's because we are still very young, but I'm very enthusiastic about coming back here and to continue working, you know, in writing or in hopefully in curating some things that can make more people to be in touch and be aware of their cultural heritage, of their artistic heritage. I think that's extremely important. And I think that's also the reason why sorry, the situation why I personally I'm more in this particular moment, I'm more interested in writing, in doing research, historical research, is because there's none. I mean, there's none. If you're interested in a subject, there's no literature on that subject. Yeah. So you have to do all the research by yourself. You have to start to be the pioneer of a subject, or a type of painting, a type of architecture. You pretty much are your own man. You're the only one.
Yeah.
So I do think it's like urgent. It's like a necessity that people that young people start to come back to Peru and to work for Peru. A lot of older people has told me that I believe this because I'm very young and idealistic, but someday I will realize that. I mean, for instance, the chief curator of the museum where I work, the director of the museum, she when she finished her PhD, her name is Natalia Makhlouf. She's the director of the museum. She studied in Austin, in Texas, and she came back here too because she was really interested in working for her country. But she found this amazing colonial pieces, and she was interested in giving these pieces to the National Museum. But it was so difficult, so bureaucratic, and so pretty much impossible to complete this transaction, that she started to, and she always discusses this case in classes, right? That she started to thinking about other possibilities for taking care and for showing this heritage that were not in the state. So in that sense, I guess that a lot of people tells me, you're going to New York, you should stay there. Everything is going to be, people are going to appreciate your work more. People are going to appreciate your interests, your art. That's also that's a very strong image too for me, because I've realized, for example, that in CUNY and in other universities, I can talk about folk art or Andean art in a more well-received way than in Peru itself, because in Peru we have so many prejudices against folk art, for example, about Peruvian folk art. So, and in the States, those prejudices, I don't think they are as present as in Peru itself. I don't know if I'm explaining that correctly, but what I mean is that, or for example, that I can present as a second language the language from my country, the Quechua, which is a language from the indigenous people from here. But I can do that in New York, but I can't do that here in Peru, because in Peru there's a lot of prejudice related to the indigenous people from Peru.
Wow.
So, yes, yeah, so it's crazy. But,
yeah.
But in New York, at least in the university I'm going, some traditions from my own country are better perceived or received than in my own country.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's crazy. And that's the type of things that makes you want to not going back, I guess.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I got the first hint of that when I went to go visit all of you. And, you know, my grandmother, who, you know, she's been living in the States since she was very young. She left Peru, you know, she was and she's the oldest of five kids, I think it is. And she, you know, never in the whole time that I ever knew that she understood and could speak Quechua. until I went to Peru and I saw you and I saw your dad and I saw, you know, my other, your other uncles and your aunts, you know, like speak to her in Quechua and she's responding. And I was like, and it was so interesting. And I asked my grandmother, I said, this is so cool. I didn't know this. Why didn't you tell me? And my grandmother's response was like, oh, I don't think it was that important, you know. And I was like, what? And they were like, why isn't it not important? And then she kind of hinted towards of like that she was really trying to avoid it when she was in Peru. You know, she was like, it was just kind of, she said, it's just kind of a family thing. And then when she came to the States, you know, she felt like, you know, nobody knows in the States or cares or knows what it is. And but here I was in your guys' house, you know, and you guys were speaking it and openly and proud of it. And it just was so interesting. And it's crazy now, you know, now everyone, it's crazy that you mentioned that now you'll be more comfortable for you to like talk and basically brag, you know, proudly about your heritage in the States. But then but you can't really do that in Lima.
Yeah, that's crazy because, I mean, you have to go outside of your own country to be proud of your own country.
Yeah, that's nuts. Well, let's talk about a little bit about your past, your heritage and your past. I mean, how far back does your interest in art history, the art history of your country and in your family and mm-hmm. How far back did it go? Was that something you've always wanted to do when you were younger? Did your dad had your mom ever have an influence on wanting to pursue a career in the arts?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I haven't thought about that, I guess, but I do think that I was lucky enough to be raised in a family that is very open to arts and to the humanities in general. I've got for the part of my dad especially, which is your far uncle.
Right.
He's I think he was very influential to me in the sense that he comes from an Andean city. He comes from Huaylas, which is in the south of Peru, which is pretty much that probably you know that. I'm pretty sure you know this is a rural area, right? I mean, it's not a city. It's just like in the Andes.
Right.
But he was always very proud of that. And I'm not sure if he always was this proud, but when he got to a city, to Chimbote, he started to be part of leftist movements, a little bit socialist, I guess.
Yeah.
But also, I think it was in the context of these ideas that he started to pay attention to his heritage, to be proud of it, but also that he started to pay attention to culture because he started to work as a journalist. And in this moment, in Peru, in '60s, to be a journalist was and also a possibility for pursuing political interests, but also for pursuing a career for people that did not... people that was not able to get a career like you and me, right? I mean, he didn't went to college. He pretty much finished school, and he hardly finished school because of the economical problems of his family, of our family. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, he always was interested in politics and in culture, but was not able to study them in an academic way. Mm-hmm. He has published many books on the history of his hometown and the history of the north of Peru too, mm-hmm. because he always had that interest, but they are not traditionally academic books, right? Mm-hmm. And I honestly think, and this is not something that I've talked about with him, but I honestly think that in that way, he kind of influenced me to try to do that which he was not able to do, to try to be interested in culture and in some way in politics, I guess, from an academic perspective, right? And so right now, for example, that I was able, I was accepted in some PhD programs, he was like, he was happier than me, but he was like emphasizing that you managed to got what I couldn't and what my dad couldn't, right? I mean, like in that sense, and I pretty much think that I was lucky enough to had his influence on me, so to try to work hard, right? To get these things that he and his dad were not able to get. And I think that was the main influence for me. So of course I'm interested in arts, but I also think I'm interested in my country. And I think that love for the country and for trying to talk about the country, that's something I got from my parents since I was a little kid. Since I saw him doing research in his own way, since I saw him doing politics in the house, you know. And also since I grew up attending not museums, but cultural events. And different types of cultural events, more like folkloric events, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's I think that was. I mean, I'm not trying to say that my mom did not influence me. She definitely did in so many ways, personal ways maybe. But I think the interest in the humanities start from there. Mm-hmm. But I also I realized about the arts part of me when I was in college, finishing my philosophy minor, I guess. And I realized that philosophy was terribly abstract for me, way too abstract for me. And I started to work with people in the university, people from the arts faculty. And I start to realize how they mainly activities were related to concrete objects, mm-hmm. to concrete production, right? Like to very materialistic, I don't know if that's the word, with very concrete experiences. And I guess that coming from where I was at that moment with concepts and abstract ideas, I was fascinated by how sometimes those ideas can be related to very concrete, very productive procedures. And I fell in love with that. I fell in love with the possibility of, I've got this very general interest in culture and in politics, but I didn't have it. I needed a more concrete approach to that and to talk about the things that I'm interested, but starting from a very concrete and a specific and particular instance. And I think that's what the arts are for me. And I think that when I start to work in the museum, once I was in the middle of my master's program, when I start to work in the museum, I realize of what an artistic career involves, right? It involves going to so many collections, going to so many different places, and trying to understand a specific archaeological piece, a specific painting, a specific sculpture, and that always will bring you to social issues, to political issues, to cultural issues, but you will also always we have to hold the object or to see the object. And I think that's the two-side experience that I like. that's pretty much a very weird explanation of or why I was interested in the arts. Yeah.
Is there a specific part of art history, of the art history of Peru, that you're interested in studying?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Right now, I'm trying to start a project. My master thesis was related to architecture, to 20th century architecture, to modern architecture. Uh-huh. But also, when I was in the museum, I was working with photography, with modern photography, and with photojournalism. So currently, I'm actually trying to do some research on how in the, since the 40s, but until present, there's a lot of informal urbanistic growth, and that moment in which we have lots of social, economical problems here in Peru, starting from the 40s and continue to the moment of violence in the 80s, there was a lot of migration. A lot of people live in the Andes or in other parts of the country. They went to the cities, and especially to Lima, to the capital. And that that phenomenon, the social urban phenomenon, also produced a lot of informal practices. Of informal urbanistic practices from people with less economical resources. So, and right now at this moment, I'm starting to doing some research on how, this process starts in the 40s, and I was gathering photojournalism on these issues, because it's very fascinating to see how the media, how newspapers, or how other political or social instances, they represent this moment through so beautiful pictures, very interesting to read pictures, but very rhetorical, sometimes very prejudiced, but also sometimes very very proud of the courage of these people that starting a new life in a completely different place here in Lima. So I'm interested in that aspect of photojournalism, but I'm also interested in how this experience was represented by artists in the 60s and the 70s, by more contemporary artists, more avant-garde artists, I guess, that use this context, but also the materials these people use in their constructions, how these artists appropriate these situations and this production in their own artistic proposals, in their own artistic projects. For example, some forms of socially engaged art, but also some forms of installation or conceptual art that, or performance, obviously, that talks about the process of migration to Lima. This is in the 60s and 70s. And also, this whole context is in relation and is in opposition to other architectural, urbanistic plans from the state. And so I'm also interested in how this process is in opposition to the ideal plans from the state for urbanism and for architecture. So, as you can see, my research is very weird, and it's not very well defined yet, but I've got this general interest in this process of urban change, yeah. And I think and how it's represented in different fields is represented in photojournalism, and you have the work of amazing Peruvian photo. We have a beautiful photo reputation here in Peru from the 20th century and even the 19th century.
Yeah.
And we have so amazing photojournalists. It's that with whom they also have their own political agendas, obviously, right?
Mm-hmm.
But also how artists, more like conceptual or even painters, they reflect on these issues, and also how these issues are in contrast with the urbanistic plans for the city.
Yeah.
I don't have a abstract yet, but I'm thinking of having these different fields to talk to me and to talk to the reader about a process from our history.
Yeah, so it seems, it seems, I can see the connection. Like, you're very interested in how basically the history, the social history of Peru kind of influences a lot of contemporary art and a lot of, like, and it seems like you're very interested in trying to investigate that more and investigate, like, how the past and the present are very still well connected, and how the present still looks to the past for either, I guess, an understanding or influence in making art. And I guess the art is kind of the expressive way to show that, right? I mean, that's what it seems like you're trying to
put. Yeah, I don't want to sound like a social history guy.
No,
because I do think, and I do think that's one of the things that I learned in the museum. At least I one of the things that I want to believe that I learned in the museum is that usually art is not about how do I say this? Art can be in relation to society, definitely,
mm-hmm.
but it's not like its reflection. It's not like just its reflection. It's so much more. And in that sense, it's more like ideally, I would love to start from these productions, these artistic, but also these cultural, like photojournalist productions.
Right.
And then to understand something about my country, right? But I'm not Marxist.
Right.
Not as my father. I'm not trying to. No, because I know that that's a debate. And that's also a very strong debate here in Peru, particularly, because as you may know here, we have this strong Marxist tradition in some of the thought that sometimes is very, how do I say that in English? It's not very smart for understanding art. It's very reductionistic. I don't know if that's the word, but it's very, it's not, does not make justice to the complexities of art.
Mm.
It's just more interested in politics, and this is leftist production, this is revolution production, this is conservative production, and that's it. And I don't want to do that. I just want to talk about what some brave and interesting people did, right? And what some people thought it was important to make an image of. And I hopefully that will make me understand something about my country. Yeah, that's what I hope.
Do you feel like it's part of like your research and your and what you eventually hope to study in New York? You know, is it you trying to still get a better understanding of the culture, of your culture in Peru, of what's happened, what is going on now? Like it's like more, and you're still trying to still find that, the best way, I guess, not find the way, but like a way to explain it in your writing. Is that?
No, I completely. Yeah. Especially because, like I was just mentioning, I think here in Peru, we don't have like, a strong art history tradition yeah. yet. As in that sense, I think that most of the histories, the narratives that are written about my country are more strongly influenced by anthropology, by sociology, mm-hmm. and social history, for example. Mm-hmm. And I know that if I go to New York, I will work with people that is more aware of the different aspects of art that maybe are not discussed here in Peru. I mean, I want to learn from someone that's a specialist in the history of photography in general,
yeah.
right? Like in the States or in Germany or in Russia or wherever.
Yeah.
Or I want to know a specialist in public spaces, for example, a specialist in public monuments from China, or I don't know, and I want to learn how they study what they study. I want to learn how they see what they see. And because sometimes, and that also happens to me all the time, I believe that something is something happens in a way because it has to happen that way. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when someone from a different country comes and tells me, no, it doesn't have to be that way. It could be in a completely different way, but in your country, it happened that way, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that I need that. And for example, I was talking with an art historian from the United States, and she was talking about how art history here in Peru is written not by art historians, because we don't have art historians, mm-hmm. but it's written by artists, for example. A lot of our histories was made by artists
yeah.
who also use that heritage to make their own art, for example.
Right.
That's very interesting, for example. And she told me that she perceived that methodology, that situation and that methodology is also present in a lot of the art critics and curators that we have until today. So she kind of was suggesting like a continuation in that tradition, you know, in the fact that since we don't have art historians in the pure sense, we do have some interdisciplinary academia for the arts. And she was suggesting that she thinks that that is a tradition specific to our history, something that I always saw more like a lack or like a fail. I don't know how to say that.
So you think you don't think that that's like a good thing, like that you don't have a pure art historian, but she's trying to tell you. It is, and that's actually something
yeah.
that's unique to
yeah,
Peru.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, and, yeah.
And I think it was great to... I think sometimes I need someone outside mm-hmm. telling me, it's okay to speak Quechua, right?
Yeah.
Or so it's okay yeah. to that you don't have a pure history. But yeah. that's only one case, because, like I mentioned right now, I want to work with a specialist on, for example... public monuments from China, right? Yeah. Because I think that will be very productive for me. I will probably learn how to study public monuments here in Peru mm-hmm. in a way that I will not learn if I only study with a sociologist or an anthropologist, for yeah. example. I don't know.
It makes sense. You're really trying to... I mean, you're embracing the interdisciplinary studies. Like
I don't have an option.
yeah, yeah. No, you're definitely like, you don't want a one-sided version or one-sided education. You want definitely the many sides of it, and you want that to help influence your studies.
And I do think that I choose CUNY. I choose that city because I hope that I will learn a lot from culturally diverse context as yeah. the one that takes place in New York, or at least that's what I'm.
Oh yeah,
I've heard.
No, and I think you will. I mean, it's probably the best place to go. I think in the country, in this whole country, I think to where it's super multi diverse.
at least in the aspect of that diversity, right? And mm-hmm. the aspect of at least at the level of discourse of yeah. accepting that diversity, right? So
yeah.
I think that's something that I need in the sense that I'm very, especially since you definitely know this, when you start to work in an institution, you start to be very influenced by one way to do things, right?
Yeah.
They need to be done in this way because that's the only way that we're going to function. And probably I and that's perfect and that works for a purpose. But I think that now I do need to see all different types of situations happening,
yeah.
taking place. I think that will be what I want, right? And I think that's something I hope I can always get to yeah. always go in different directions, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I fall victim to that that thought sometimes where I feel like, oh, there's this one way to do it, and this is the only way to do it, and and then I find out the hard way many times that yeah. that's not the case. You know, and when I went to grad school, that was my mindset. You know, it's either you're either an artist, you're either a historian.
Yeah.
You know, there's no mixture of the two. And then I learned yeah. really quick that yeah. there's a lot of other students that believed and can like do both at the same time. And some that didn't, you know, there were some people who were, you know, strictly art historians and people were strictly artists and, you know, but there were many more. And I feel like that's more of a move lately too, that, you know, like for instance, over here in the States, I'm realizing more and more that the role of like a curator being the only person who can put on an exhibit of an artist's work is no, mm-hmm. it's slowly, not being the case anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you know, artists are now curating their own work.
Yeah.
And, you know, and also being the art historian for their own work.
Yeah.
And not having to rely on the narrative of a you know, created by the curator or another art historian of their own work. And I do see that even here. So that's interesting too, that you know, that that it took someone from the outside to kind of say that to you or like bring that to light a little bit.
definitely. Definitely.
And is that just because, you know what, like, here's a question. So how do you think that came to be in Peru, that artists were kind of having to be that there aren't a pure art historians in Peru, mm-hmm. like, and that artists are having to be their own art historians?
Well, I think it's more like a historical process. We don't have an art history discipline. I mean, an art history career in mm-hmm. a university until the 60s.
Oh, wow.
Until the 1960s. And when it started in the National University, sadly, it did not went very well because political and economical problems from the university. And there's only a few people from that context that are and when I say a few, I say like five. I don't say a few like 500. Yeah. I mean a few, really a few people that are writing, are producing texts. And the program where I studied was in a private university, in the Catholic University, Universidad Católica. Mm-hmm. And it's a new program. It's really new, and it hasn't produced many people, many producers yet, I guess. So it's a very weird situation because we do not have many art historians, but we do have this sense of that there should be, and that when sometimes, like you just mentioned, sometimes we also have sometimes here artists or writers that are interested in writing our history in a way, all of a sudden there are critics, right, that are start to say, oh, but he's not a real historian. No? He shouldn't be writing about this stuff. Yes, so we have very few people, and I think that's the situation that has... And I think it's out of necessity that some artists, since the beginning of the 20th century until today, mm-hmm. are starting to investigate into to doing research on their artistic tradition, because so many artists here, I mean, even the more conceptuals, they are very, the ones that supposedly not work with specific objects, even them use the images of the past, the images of our culture in their own work. And there's amazing work that is done in that sense, in painting, in installations, in all different types of areas. And when they do that, and when they do that research, they a lot to start to write something like a small text, like a catalog, like an exhibition, for example. Oh, that's something also very interesting of here. Our art history is mainly written in catalogs. It's not necessarily written in books. There's no many universities that are investing in publishing books on art history. So mostly it's in the context of an exhibition, like they take a little bit of the budget of the exhibition to print a catalog and to pay a little bit to the researcher. So that catalog becomes the history of that theme.
Wow.
So that's very interesting. That's very fascinating.
Yeah.
It's very fascinating how the histories of since ancient to contemporary art are written here, because sometimes it's in the context of an art fair with all the economic interests that are there. It's in the context of an art fair that narrative of the 80s, for example, is written. So you can be in the most fancy and elegant art fair in Lima, and there's an exhibition there on socially engaged art from the 80s. And it's a little like paradoxical in a way, I guess, but the only context for doing research on political art of the 80s is made by a very fancy and like upper class institution in the most exclusive part of Lima, you know. So
yeah.
it's weird, but that's how our history has been done. And yes, since a puristic perception, it might be not a good thing, because there's interests in exhibitions, there's interests in artists themselves sometimes. Artists sometimes are more interested in some, for example, in indigenous art, for example, just to say one example, and are not interested in more hybrid forms of art, for example, Peruvian / French or / Spanish forms of art. So they are going to give a partial account of a period, like the 40s or the 20s. So in that way, I guess it's complicated, because yes, an artist tends, not necessarily does, but tends to be more interested in the aspect that interests her or him the most. Mm-hmm. But also, I think everybody has their bias, right?
Yeah.
Even the academics that supposedly are so serious and objective, they have their biases too. They have their friends, they have their colleagues that they like and the ones that they don't like. So they also have their way of telling their histories. But something that probably I do want to mention is that there's people, and I see that because I work in an environment with, I don't know, I guess, institutional museum pretentiousness, that I've heard that people complain a lot about how artists curate and how artists write.
Yes.
I do have to say that they are the keener, I mean, in this context, artists are the keener, the people that has been more capable of engaging with a type of art that nobody else does in their own period, in their own time. For example, right now, well, like I was telling you just a little bit earlier, some avant-garde artists on, how do you say this? I think that we have La Neo-Vanguardia, which is like vanguardist from the 60s, which is not the same as the avant-garde from the 20s, which is very different. Mm-hmm. But we have avant-garde artists in the 60s that were seeing to informal architecture, to the low-income architecture, right? I mean, architecture made by people with low income. And they pay attention to that, and they consider them art. They consider them some way of art in the sense that it's part of the, it's a crucial part of some people's life. So these artists were more interested in those buildings or in those subjects than the architects or the historians from their time. The same thing happens with folk art. Artists were always more interested and more keen to write about folk art than historians or than art historians or even museum curators.
Right.
So I think that's brilliant. I think that...
Right. Then I guess that's how the artists end up becoming also double as art historians, just because they're covering and writing about art that, you know, more academic art historians are not really wanting to cover or not interested to write about.
Yeah. And in the end, when you're trying to do research on something, something that has not been researched before, you realize of the tremendous effort and the tremendous insight of these artists that are telling you about these objects or about these buildings. And you say, wow, these people are not only sensitive, but also brilliant and insightful in a way that sometimes a lot of classic, more stiff art historians are not. So, I mean, probably just to finish an idea that you were mentioning before, I do think that our Peruvian scene is very interdisciplinary. It's not interdisciplinary because we decided, but because that's how it is. That's how it happened. And I like to think that that's a positive thing. Mm-hmm. And I like to think that it's a positive situation. I want to learn more about our history in the States because I think it will be very important for me. But I also do not want to lose that interdisciplinary background that I gained here out of necessity. And probably that's something that I can share, and it could be interesting for some. And also, I do think that artists here, not only art historians, but also artists here, are very interdisciplinary. The schools of art are not as efficient, probably, as in other parts of Latin America, are not as supportive of their students. So many artists have a different career, like journalists, like sociologists, like anthropologists, also a lot right now. So I think that can only be good for their production, for their outcome.
Yeah.
Well, I think so. I mean, I've been seeing amazing drawings, for example, from Nancy La Rosa, which is a young contemporary artist. She makes these drawings on this is a complex word, excavations that are made by the mine how do you say this? Sometimes there's an institution from the private sector that wants to make an excavation and take the mineral and the natural resources from a region in the Andes, for example.
Okay.
I don't know if that's understandable.
Oh, no, totally. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, and she has made these beautiful drawings of these excavations, which obviously affect, right, the lives of the people in that region, right, in terrible ways. And she started this as an anthropologist. And she started this research as an anthropologist, as a case study for an anthropologist thesis. Mm-hmm. But she started to pay attention to more formal aspects of this very dense economical, political process. And she's made beautiful exhibitions on this issue. And I think she has done a fantastic job relating that context with a more artistic language. And also, for example, there's this other important case here that I remember right now. There's this anthropologist. His name is Edilberto Jiménez. He was an anthropologist in the 90s when we had a very hard time of political violence here in Peru in the 80s and the 90s. And Edilberto went to some of the most affected regions like Ayacucho or, Huancavelica, and he make... He took some of the testimonies from the people that were present when the violence happened in their towns. And with these testimonies, he made these amazing drawings, and he also made these altar pieces, which in the tradition of altar pieces from Ayacucho, which it's a very very well-known tradition of folk art. And he made these installations with... the visual installations that told the history of the people he interviewed and he was in touch with. And he started this also as an anthropology work, because he was working. He was not doing artistic research or anything. He was just, he needed to work the work, so he worked there. And probably it's very similar in a way in San Francisco in other parts of the world, but I just wanted to mention that our artists are interdisciplinary too. Yeah. And I think that can only be enriching, right? I think that can only be positive.
Oh, yeah. And I think worldwide, that's like a new... That's where the art-making process is going towards, is being more interdisciplinary. And it's only making it better, I think. You know, like, it's not, you know... I think the days of, I'm only a photographer, I'm only a sculptress, yeah, I'm only a drawer, are gone. You know, I think it's slowly people combining their interests in more than one art discipline. It's going to be the future of art-making, I think, you know.
Yeah, well, it is the present.
Yeah, and, exactly, yeah.
And I do hope that it continues to be in that way, because you know, it's taking advantage of an space, the art scene, the art spaces, the art field, that it's taking advantage of that scene to talk about all sorts of issues, right? Like political... issues, economical issues, environmental issues. So, and sometimes when it's like, I was just saying that in an art fair, in the most expensive and exclusive art fair here in Lima, you suddenly are able to talk about this because it's obviously it's symbolic capital, and everybody's like, oh, how cool, right? But it's also a possibility for debate, hopefully, right? If you are idealistic, I guess.
Yeah. Well, so I'm wondering, so let's say, you know, what do you, once you're done with your fellowship in New York and you go back to Peru, like, what do you hope to do? Like, where do you see yourself, like, the 10 years from now doing?
Yeah, that's a very weird question, especially because it's not... It's not a thing where it's easy to know what will still be there because we don't have strong institutions, not necessarily in any of the spaces, nor in the universities or in the exhibition spaces. I mean, luckily, I made some good connections with a museum which I love here, and also I've got some friends with and some people that I esteem a lot in the Católica University. So I think I will be able to find some spaces for teaching and for curating in the future. But also, I'm very aware that this is not a country where you can just say, in 10 years, I will have this. Because I have so many amazing friends. They are doing amazing jobs. They're doing amazing work on researching or curating. And they still are not able to get a position, like a good position in a good institution, because there are only a few jobs, and they are all taken by older people. So it's hard to actually be certain about what can you get in that context. And I think that's also why I'm living in this moment, because I do want to see what else it's like a possibility for trying out, right? Because the possibilities are very few here. But I would like to think that I will be able to get back and to continue doing not only research, but also curatorial work in the Museo de Arte de Lima. Mm-hmm. And also I would definitely would love to teach. I mean, I have taught. I know how to communicate my ideas in a classroom, I think. But also, I would love to be in contact, in direct contact with students and to discuss the ideas I care about. Teaching and curating, I guess that's the only way. And also, I think it's very similar in the States, but here, if you only teach, it's difficult to write because the teaching takes all your time. So I guess I will try to teach and then to also curate, because when you curate, you have to write, you have to do research, you have to produce your own thing. Yeah. And that's something that I always want to keep doing. I don't want to stop doing that. And probably will be hard, but hopefully I will be able to manage. So I don't want to stop working in exhibitions, because that's how I get in touch with objects, and that's how I write about them and I think about them. And like we were just talking about this, in Peru, that's the only way probably in which you can publish on your thing. The art history here is written in catalogs, basically. Mm-hmm. And probably that's what at least so far, and I mean, probably the new elected president will change that. I don't think so, but mm-hmm. at least how things are right now, yeah, that the curatorial work is the only place where you can do research on art.
Wow. Well, that's...
Oh, I'm making it sound like a terrible thing. It's, no. It's not an offer.
No, no. It's I don't think it's terrible. I think you're just pointing out what it is. It's not like you're saying it's bad. You're just pointing out like this is just the way it is in Peru right now.
Yeah, because I want it to be better. You know, I try to see what is not perfect.
Yeah.
Because I want it to be better. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well. Thanks. Thanks for coming on, Horacio.
Thank you for the patience, and thank you for it's been really it's been amazing for me to think about the Peruvian scene and to think about we have talked about a lot of issues right now, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's a great scene. I mean, I'm afraid that I make it sound like it's the worst, but it's not. And if I don't know if someone listens to what I'm saying, I do think that it's a very rich and diverse scene, but also it's a scene that you have to experience by yourself to be here and to like you mentioned you did when you came here to Peru and you saw how alive is the production here. Yeah. And I hope you come back and you can probably I will be able to give you a better look at our institutions and our different spaces here because they are very rich right now. Yeah. And they deserve to be paid attention to.
No, totally. Ever since my last visit, I've definitely wanted to go back. And you're right; it is very alive. It was very alive when you showed me the small glimpse of it you gave me.
Yeah.
It seemed very alive, and I've been very interested in it since then. Which is why I wanted to have you on, and I'm glad you came on. And I definitely learned a lot, like in the last hour, and I hope my listeners do too. I hope you come back on too. I think I'll love to have you back on and maybe by then you'll be in New York.
I will be telling a different story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks Horacio. And, I'll see you later.
Thanks,
bye.
See you later.
And that everyone was my cousin Horacio. It was definitely interesting to hear his perspective on the Peruvian art scene, as well as its history and cultural background. Hopefully we'll get to have him back on again once he settles in New York. All right, well, that's it for this week, and be sure to check out past episodes of the Art Scene Podcast at artscenepc.com and follow me on Twitter at artscenepc. Till next time, everyone.